We're back to it's not good for man to be alone. We didn't get very far last time. Let's go to Genesis 2. Again, it says in verse 16, and the Lord God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it. For in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. And the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I'll make him a helpmeet for him. And goes up, in verse 24, it says, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, and the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. It was pointed out that at this point, when this was said, there was no mother. It wasn't really a father. Mm-hmm. So what did it mean? We talked about that this makes absolutely no sense if you literalize the parable. It only makes sense when you look through time and see Christ in his aloneness. And then who was Christ? Who was Christ's mother? Christ's mother was obviously Mary, but that was of the natural. Who was Christ's spiritual mother? Like his synagogue or his... But that doesn't really compute either, does it? The only way you can answer that question is you have to go to the ancient Jewish mythology from the Zohar.
It's got to be the mother's tent. It's got to be the Matrona, though. It's got to be Jerusalem.
The heavenly Matrona, which is the New Jerusalem, which is the mother of us all. Galatians 4. Verse 19, my little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you, I desire to be present with you now and to change my voice, for I stand in doubt of you. Tell me, you that desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid and the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by promise. Which things are an allegory, for these are the two covenants, the one from the Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Hagar. For this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. Understand it? So the body here, its only function, the best it can be, is to be, in this view of the picture, the best it can be is to be connected to the heavenly Matron. So then we become, the body as a whole becomes the mother. Got it? So, you have to leave your mother and your father, the natural. But in spirit, you have to leave this also, your mother and father. How do you leave it? You leave it when you become the minister instead of the one ministered to. When you become the one that gives instead of the one that gains. You got it? Everybody understand that?
Is that tying with that thing about that story about the child with the umbilical cord fighting?
Yeah. All right. Now, but that's not what we're going to talk about. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and they shall cleave unto his, and he shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. In the Hebrew it says one new flesh, one new thing. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. But then after the fall, verse 7, it says, and the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons. And they heard the voice of the Lord walking in the garden. The Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God amongst the trees of the garden. And the Lord God called unto Adam and said unto him, Where art thou? And he said, I heard thy voice in the garden. I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself. And he said, Who told thee that thou wast naked? So what happened? Here they were naked and unashamed. Here they were naked and ashamed. What happened?
Self-awareness.
Self-consciousness. Now, can you understand what abandonment of self means in the first requirement of a disciple? The first requirement of a disciple is to deny yourself. The Greek word is apardiomai. Abandon yourself. Take no thought of or about yourself in any dimension. First requirement of a disciple.
No self-consciousness.
So you return to the point before the fall. That's why, except you become as the little child, you can nowise enter the kingdom. Now, this point of no self-consciousness has to be tested. The reason, that's why what a companion antagonist does. The purpose of the wife, the purpose of the helpmate, the purpose of the companion antagonist, the purpose of the marriage is to find out whether or not you truly have abandoned yourself. Okay? Now, if you start into a marriage without the knowledge that the only purpose of the marriage is that you learn to abandon yourself, then the marriage has no possibility of succeeding. Because by definition, all that will happen is accusation.
I used to be astounded that 50% of all marriages failed, and now I'm astounded that 50% of all marriages don't.
Well, it's higher than 50% now, but
yeah.
But the 50% that don't are based on a truce.
Right.
They've called a truce, and they've made an alliance with each other to act like they're happy for the sake of the family.
Like it can't work because they don't know what marriage is supposed to be. So you don't know what it's supposed to be. If you don't know that, it tests your lack of subconsciousness.
Okay, do you understand this perfectly? The only purpose of marriage isn't to get laid, isn't to legitimize sex, isn't to make babies, isn't to be it's a sacrament, but not in the context that people think it's a sacrament. The purpose of marriage is to reveal to the body as a whole the possibility of existence without self-awareness. That's a biggie. So that means that from standpoint, much of his life is going to need exhortation from the rest of the body on this one issue, to abandon yourself, no self-awareness. You exhort one another daily while it is still called today. What do you exhort them about? You exhort to enter into the rest. You exhort to forget yourself. You exhort to abandon yourself. Does everybody understand that clearly? Now tell me, I'm a neophyte. I don't know anything about human nature or marriage. Tell me about what marriage is. Tell me about marriage.
Fighting.
Okay.
Fighting.
What else about marriage? What words come to your head when you say marriage?
Marriage, companionship, ball and chain.
Boy,
Rosie,
she had good experience too.
Well, look who she's married.
Webs. Bondage, fighting, disagreement. Truce is good.
Yeah, but it seems to me, from what I know about you, your marriage must have been one of quiet desperation.
Yeah.
Silent death. Because you couldn't really fight. Fighting wouldn't have been in your nature.
Right.
So everything was internalized. Mm-hmm. So it was a life of total aloneness. Okay. Tell me about your marriage, Mr.
Well, I'm just very glad to be able to say that there's a contrast between the way it was and the way it is.
Well, I'm talking about what's in your mind the way it was.
The way it was, wow. That is a long, that's polarized.
Obligation?
Some. That wasn't big. It was like this, polarized, disinterested, apart, selfish.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is living hell.
That's a good one.
Not having needs met, not having expectations met.
This is how it was, right?
bondage, slavery. Terrible.
Now, was it that way before you got here?
No, it's been that way since I've been here.
No, I know, but tell me, you what about, did you know all this before, in all the years you were married, before you started coming here?
To a lesser degree, I wouldn't admit it. Or we were both trying to serve the same God, you know, propping up the same idols, trying to come to some agreements on things.
Do you like read books?
No, we've never had that.
None of the how-to books?
I'm not that interested.
Work.
Well, I mean, I'm serious. I mean, what did you ever come, were you ever honest with yourself before you came here?
Yeah, I mean, there were many times at the kitchen table where I said, you know, we need to cut our losses now and make the split. This is not, neither one of us are happy, neither one of us want this, neither one of us are surviving in this.
Okay, so what was happening is that you became naked because you couldn't hide anymore, but you became naked and confounded or ashamed or all the other things, right? That's what happened in your marriage. It was happening real quick.
Yeah, straight. I wasn't going to live like that for very long. Yeah, I remember making the conscious decision, look, Crystal, either you're going to live this way the rest of your life, or you're going to have to... You're the one that's going to have to pack that in me.
I don't know what I walked in on, but I know what you just said. What you just said is exactly what my first wife said to me many times. This is not working. This is ridiculous. And I would just go back into a dream world and say, oh, no, it's going to work out there. He's going to be fine.
Well, what I'm trying to get... What I'm trying to get to is what... truces, what compromises, what alliances were made between you to allow that state of being to exist for that long?
And us was don't talk about it. It was avoid the issue.
So the conspiracy was one of silence, and it slowly built. every once in a while there'll be little niches or nicks in the peace when there is no peace, but it was conspiracy of silence.
That's why we communicate so well now.
Well, what is this stuff when you got here about saying all I want to be is the best wife that God can make me to be?
I thought that would make it work.
The phrase that'll never die.
I thought, yeah.
The phrase
that'll be over my head on my tombstone. Said the first time she came to us.
A phrase from hell.
But we can all remember. It was an epinephrine experience. We can all remember.
Does anybody remember my response to her?
No, I don't.
Somewhere over.
No.
I don't remember.
I said, yeah, right. Oh, shit.
I remember dignity.
Mighty deep.
Yeah,
I forgot. Dignity. What was the question?
What caused the alliance to last, or the conspiracy, or the truce to last for so many years when you were miserable?
For me? I would have left this marriage more times than I can count if I could have afforded to.
No.
So it's financial.
I was thinking about that last night. We had a little tiff, and that came to mind. She told me that I wish the hell you'd make enough money so I could leave. And that's still bringing in here.
So that's probably, yeah, I'm sure that's a reason, that's a fear thing.
Yeah, it is. Definitely.
Okay, well, you got to confess that as sin. That's an idol.
I know.
Okay.
Because that's why I came up.
Okay, well, what?
Well, I mean, you know, that's the easy, that's the main fear in me that pops up, the main deal. And I've looked at that. I mean, that's just like an easy reach for me, something to reach up and say, well, this is what's trapping me. But when I've looked at it, I mean, really hardcore looked at it, that's not either. That's just kind of like a fleshy pain. I grant on to.
What else is there?
Of why I stayed? I don't know. I something I can't explain, but I feel connected to him.
Well, but that doesn't wash in here.
Well, yeah, I know.
Just because of the kids, and you connect to the kids' wives, or?
No.
Well, that's the reason that most people stay together after they have children, is for the kids' sake.
I don't know. I mean, if there's something there.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, this question is sort of meaningless with Crystal. But what gave you what was your alliance to last all those months?
all those weeks.
6 months from hell, Crystal.
5 months.
Oh, five.
When did you know?
I know, oh man, I knew like at the altar.
I bet you knew before you were married.
But I didn't, but the only reason why I didn't was because inside I turned around and went through all those people that have driven all the way to West Texas. And all the kids, and I mean, even God, David, like, the night before, said, took me aside and said, now.
Who, David?
David. He said, now, you can say the word, and I will call this whole thing off. And that's like ringing in my head, the during the weeks. But I went through with it anyway at the altar. And then when we went to, by the time we got back to Peoria, there was no honeymoon. We walked into his apartment. I remember him walking in the door, closing it, setting the suitcases down. It was like right there. And it was like, oh my God. Then it was just a matter of, it just like going through the motions, you know, whenever I was conscious. You know. But I think it was, you know, not knowing what marriage was supposed to be and thinking, well, maybe this is part of marriage. And call his mom, and that Christmas, we got married in November, and that Christmas I went home to Kentucky. I didn't spend my first Christmas with him in Illinois.
You'd spend your second Christmas with him,
either. You know, and I just, you know, people would tell me, well, you know, I think David gave me Gloria gave me this book to read about. It was this Christian couple, and, oh, that's it. They sent us on a marriage retreat right after we got married. Yeah, they sent us a marriage retreat. It was a weekend marriage retreat somewhere. So that was not a good sign. We kept joking about that not being a good sign. The whole time it was like, finally after...
Oh, I forgot we went on one of those too.
Oh, you did?
We went to Masters in Johnson.
So I guess the reason why it lasted as long as it did is because I thought that, you know, this is what a marriage was supposed to be, and that this is the way you're supposed to act. If you're going to be married, you know, I remember telling me that when I got real pissed off at him about something he'd said or something he'd done, and he said, well, you're going to have to get used to it. And it was just like, it was like at that point something died in me, and it was like it clicked off, and then that's pretty soon after that, I said, no, you're wrong, buddy. I don't have to get used to it. See it. And I think ever since then, there's been, what is marriage about? What is it for? You know? So, I mean, this is really, I'm really peeling my ears, peeling my eyes.
Well, I remember very clearly I was wanting a covering, and I was scared to death to break up and get divorced because I wouldn't have a covering. I needed somebody to see to it that I would pay the bills and get up in the morning and go to work and be responsible.
I remember I tried, and then like had to get up real early for this morning show. And he'd get pissed off because I was still asleep when he left, right? So I'd get up, you know, after that, like this huge fight about it. Then I'd like had this like coffee set, you know, like we got in this like silver tray and little cups and little, you know, I'd left it with just, like a nice note. God,
talk about pearls before
spill and drought. You know, well, I was just trying to, you know.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be gross if it was real.
Yeah, I guess that's what the gross thing is.
The gross is that it wasn't real. The gross is it was manipulative. See, that this thing about marriage here, it has to be back to the same thing about elders. We've been studying about elders in the morning Bible study, about that you can't do it either for constraint or obligation or for filthy lucre. Filthy lucre meaning personal gain. It has to be by a willing, ready mind. And so the idea of those two reasons are the only two reasons that man knows as motivators, either by constraint or obligation or for personal gain. There's no other motivators possible. So that's why spiritually a marriage can't happen without the cross. It's impossible. But that's why, you know, that's why we're talking about this. So you go in with an open mind. You know what to expect. So if you're going in because of, if you're doing this by obligation or for personal gain, then you're in for a rough time. Okay, any other reasons why you stayed married? How many years did you stay married?
First time, 9 or 10. Second time, less than a year, I think. I just
less than a year.
I had this feeling. It was like I have like a sort of a sad feeling because they were both really neat people. I just wish it could have been here.
Well, anyway, back to for the first one. What? Why did you stay married that long?
Because I was absolutely petrified at the idea of not being married. Because I believed that I needed somebody to keep me alive and cause me to be responsible and grown up.
How old were you when you first got married?
24. But I felt like I was a shiftless, lazy, no good, drunkard bum.
Something isn't ringing true here, Harry. I'm not trying to pick on you, but I think we're 1 point away from...
Maybe, but I clearly remember in college, I mean, I almost flunked out because I was drunk every night for a whole semester.
Yeah, but the reason...
I just felt I needed somebody to keep me alive.
Yeah, but the reason is, it's not in line, I think. The reason it's a more seminal fear... And that's the same fear that haunts you today. And that the fear, it's that she legitimatized your existence. And without that person, you didn't have a right to exist again. So you were back to that fear point of, not that you were shiftless or lazy or drunk, but the fear that you...
I felt like without her, I would sink in a sea of oblivion.
Yeah.
But I would end up, you know, in a bar someplace.
Yeah, but it wasn't that because you were drunk. I mean...
I would be worthless.
Yeah, it's even more seminal. It's back to that you wouldn't, it's not just that you'd be worthless, that you wouldn't be.
I don't get in touch with that. What I get in touch with is being, just sitting in my hometown, worthless, drunkard bum, in a gray, meaningless locker. Is what I'm aware of.
Okay, what about the second time?
Totally mediocre. Second time, I was definitely afraid that it would prove that the first time hadn't worked. And now, here was this time. And this time, now I believed in God, and I made deals with God about how I was going to get it right this time, and I was going to do it right. And it blew up again. And it was like, this time, it would be the end. And I think part of it was that maybe there wouldn't be a God or something. That God had brought me this wife and this relationship that had been the result of prayer or the result of belief or something like that. And that if it didn't work, then there'd be something wrong with that equation. I don't really know. It was so scary that I really don't know. And I know I feel like I almost died.
Remember the Queen of Heaven stuff?
Sorry.
I mean, I think you're getting away from it, but you had to attribute you had to give the attributes of God to that woman, that significant other. You had to see her as perfection. And, you know, hopefully that's been dispelled, but...
I think I did.
Okay, so the point of this, though, is that what happened is, through the process of marriage, through the process of the antagonism, all your armor and your clothes came off, right? Not just physically naked, but you became naked. But what happened is you became naked, and the first thing you tried to do is you tried to hide in the trees and cover yourself with the leaves of the trees, i.e. the all of the protective devices that you use in arguments and arguing with each other and stuff. But it didn't work. And so you became, both of you, naked. But what you saw spiritually is that you were naked. This is hard to say. This is the reason that God has aging. Like, you know, have you ever seen a naked, really old woman or a naked, really old man? Well, that's what you become. You understand? When the magic goes away, you see the other person as really as their this old feeble thing it's really their high place. You see all of their imperfections. You see all of, but it's like it's accelerated. I can't even explain what I mean, but I think you get a taste of it. You see them as worse as they can ever be. Okay, so you see each other naked, but you're not naked and unashamed. You're naked and totally shame-based. Okay, that's what happens in a marriage. Okay, so but again, so when you like in Harry's case, he had to pick out somebody that met this imagery to give him life. She had to give him life rather than vice versa.
heard that.
It's, I mean, in because again, his high place is the second walker, the doppelganger. He had to have this woman, had to be the one that, I mean, he would have been happy married to a Mary Kay type. You know, he'd have been a good Ralph Rogers. I mean, but each of you said all this stuff interplays here. But the bottom line is that in marriage, the purpose of marriage is so that you're naked. And then first ashamed, and then transform that into something, transform it into the mystery of the transfiguration. You got it? No.
Mike never said it when he hung in there so long.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably obligation. I made a commitment, I was going to stick with it.
I don't think Mike knows why.
I agree with you.
And the reason is, again, Mike's unique sense of, Mike doesn't live, or didn't then, live in the same planet you do.
I think he just didn't think about it. He just refused to.
Well, but whatever it was, it wasn't, he couldn't, in his, there wasn't the possibility of it failing in his vocabulary. And so, again, we're back to oblivion.
Yeah, that's really what it is. I look back and I think, what was it? Where is it? What happened? And over here, there's almost nothing there.
Yeah.
It's this big, empty place and time. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, but well, see...
I'm having a good time.
But see, yeah. But it's like...
I'm making out for it now.
But do you understand that... See... Chris, if you'd have been married to Crystal, you wouldn't have lasted 5 months.
Yeah, it wouldn't last 5 minutes.
Because Crystal's tolerance is less than yours. Your capacity for self-deception is huge. But I mean, my point to you is each one of one position isn't any better than the other. But it's like that's why a marriage can't exist outside of a body. Because in a body, when there's a minion present, we probably can't do anything tonight, then if all of those aspects of discernment of each of the members can come to the fore in the marriage, where it can't individually. My point is, you're not supposed to be a good husband.
There's nothing
worse. You're supposed to be a yielded vessel.
Yeah, nothing worse. Mm-hmm.
There's nothing worse than sitting in your little house in the suburbs, having one of those fucking endless fights, and it can never end.
No, how about, but the makeups are just
awful.
As bad.
Yeah, when it does.
No,
that's what I mean. It never ends, because all you do is you go, I'm tired, so we'll like have some kind of peace, but it doesn't end.
Yeah, but imagine, well, honey, why don't I fix dinner for you tonight? And so you go and fix dinner, and you sit there in a table.
Obligations.
And you look at each other.
Jeez.
And you say, wait.
Never again.
Is this all there is?
Never.
You know?
Never.
And so you long, you try to make friends with people that you can have them over, so you can...
Something
to speak about. So you do little game stuff. Or
dinner parties.
Or, oh, I know, let's watch a movie. Or
drink, take trips.
You do anything other than face each other's nakedness. Do you understand?
What were you saying about the role of the body in that? I think I just didn't hear something you said.
Well, it's impossible to be married without a body. You're not supposed to be a good husband. You can't be.
And what he said was all the members of the minion can each manifest their facet. So it isn't just two.
But if you go into this thinking that you're supposed to be a successful husband, you're gonna it's over.
Who's in it?
You just be. All right? Again, remember, This was several years ago. It's higher than this now. But in Dallas, 50% of the marriages end in divorce. Okay, most people, they start, you start your marriage, right? You strive for a while to make the marriage work, to preserve. And you finally give up. You just let it die. Now, in a marriage requires a total reversal of the way of thinking. The only, you've been taught your entire life to be successful in isolation, to put up a front, to act like you know what you're thinking, to act like you know what you're doing. But the fact is, you don't know shit. The moment you put up the front of acting like you're knowing what you're doing without admitting the weakness to your spouse, that's another way of killing it. You think in your mind, even at the beginning, oh, I've got to be a good husband. And you have a definition. Good husband means I have to know what I'm doing, I have to know this, I have to do this, I have to be able to do this, I have to be a good provider. None of that shit means, that's the opposite of what a good husband is. A good husband is the one who admits their weakness. Not in some mousy, whiny way, but just as a fact of life. And creates the low pressure so that life can come in. So, for you especially, that's the only way you're going to give life to Tylene, is to stop trying to get it right. The thing that will kill a marriage worse than anything else, and it kills a body. That's why it's the spiritual revelation, is trying to be right, trying to get it right. I can't imagine.
Wait, so is this like a technical term, you don't know shit?
I can't imagine. I cannot possibly imagine what it must have been like to be married to Harry. I mean,
well,
I can't.
It must have been pretty bad.
I can't even imagine.
10 years.
For 10 years. We ought to, you know, we ought to do, we ought to like get a plaque or something.
She's smart.
We ought to get a plaque.
Not smart enough.
And give it to Jane.
Jane, we ought to get, we need to, we ought to, I'm serious. We ought to get a plaque.
That would be funny.
Was Jane the first?
That would be really
yeah.
funny. She lives
over here.
Jane was the second
one.
No, Barbara was
Barbara was the second one. But we need to get this plaque for above and beyond the call of duty.
For exemplary service.
It's exemplary service. All the right things.
We know this guy.
We know.
And you deserve this.
You deserve this plaque. No, but I'm serious. Do you understand that it's the only possibility is this? It's the mindset of walking in weakness, and it's in that moment of emptying self, continually, 24 hours a day.
It's like a miniature picture of the body.
That's exactly it.
You just take your body home with you. Yeah, it's just a body in your household all the time.
And the body is the miniature picture of the bigger.
It's like having a monitor in your vice chain to your ankle.
But it's the only place where there's real life and real joy.
And real conversation.
Yes.
There's nothing more boring than listening to somebody.
I think people always say, well, in the old days, people even married, they didn't get divorced. Well, they just tolerate, had a better capacity for talking.
No, they didn't have any other choices.
Yeah.
They, you know, if they left the cave, they got eaten by a bear.
In the 50s, you know.
Well, in the 50s, if they left the cave, they got eaten by a bear.
Especially the women, now they can go out and you know, ashamed until they want to work.
No, I mean, it's, the, see, the, all of the religious leaders are decrying the moral decay in our country and the divorce. I say, praise God, because finally the reality of these things are being tested instead of the acting. I don't want to say it publicly right now, but but I mean it's all a game. It's all the world, and there's nothing in the world. There isn't a good marriage in the world. Can we get that? Can we get that straight? Everybody understand that? Oh yeah. I mean, what's happening? It's like, you know, for whatever reason, I've gotten involved with a lot of people that either have a whole lot of money or different a lot of celebrity or something. So, I mean, I'm getting like, I become the marriage counselor to some of the wildest people.
Marriage counselor to the stars.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, they just can't, I mean, it's
like.
That
on the wire.
it's like they can't believe what I'm saying to them because it's the opposite of what they've ever heard. And it's like, oh, where'd that come from? Oh, it's right there. Oh, I didn't see that before. I mean, there has to be this weakness. It's critical. And we wouldn't have known this without the fact that a body formed. I mean, 90% of the stuff that we routinely teach now, I mean, it could have been speculated as theory, but because it's been lived, it's now real. And so, I mean, that's the incumbency on you guys is to live it, especially now. I mean, that subject is your marriage. I mean, you have to live this weakness, not...
becomes not theory or doctrine or theology. Becomes,
right.
It's like you do like an hour.
Yeah, there's no. It's good because it's almost like a morning Bible study or eating at the lair. The more opportunities there are to see right in your face, the quicker to turn from.
My mother, it was an arranged marriage. My father's family was wealthy and my mother's family wasn't. Well, part of it. But anyway, and she was, he was 20 years older than she was, which didn't make him bad. You know, it's only recently that I've found out how miserable she was her whole life, her whole married life. I mean, it was incredible, but there was no, you know, finally when it just got intolerable, my father got ill. Everybody thinks it was psychosomatic after he lost all the money. He became intolerable. I mean, he was like a crazy man. And so that's when it finally became intolerable. After they left, they moved to Arizona for his health. And when she was away from all of that family pressure, then she was able to get a divorce. She divorced when I was, I think I was 16 or 17. But I didn't know they were having all those problems. I just didn't like my father. But
is it just coincidence? It seems like, at least in the stories, that it seems like it's the woman that confronts the woman that tries to get some reality. Is that just coincidence, or is that?
No, that's why it says companion. I'll make for you a helpmeet, the companion antagonist. It's the woman's job to get the reality.
I've read that like 90% of the divorces are initiated by a woman. So
they're
the one that confronted
her. Yeah. I'm also remembering like in that first one, you know, in the evening, wanting to just sit there and stare at the TV set the whole night. And her saying, turn off the TV set and let's talk.
Well, I think that's enough to think about tonight. But we're going to continue on looking at marriage all from now until the wedding. So
I think it's cool that, you know, to hear that it's a woman's job to demand reality or to keep, you know, keep knocking.
Yeah, that's why
it's like it's opposite of what we're taught. Women is supposed to be, you know, the subservient, the one you go along with, you don't make waves, you know. The real good wife does that.
Husbands.
Yeah, if you don't, you nag, you're a bitch, you know, all of this stuff.
Oh, that's the response, you're nagging, you're a bitch.
Yeah, but that's why it's husbands dwell with your wives according to knowledge, and husbands love your wife as Christ loved the church. Well, he loved the church by giving the church its total freedom. Now, that's a hard one.
That's the only way they can flourish, I guess.
And it's the only way you can flourish. It's the only way you can be happy.
It's funny, but sitting here as someone who's had messed up two marriages, or lost or whatever, two marriages, and being an old bachelor, I can sit here and I think now I can imagine the idea of treasuring a wife. I don't know that I would, that I'd be any better, but I mean, I can actually almost see it, that a husband would treasure and treat her with love and respect.
refer her.
Yeah, we got to get in, what we'll get into in the next, maybe next time, is the idea that how you handle the thing of the wife seeing other women or the woman seeing other men, or what do you, you know, the attraction, what do you do with that? So.
Good.
Well, the way you do is you transform it from judgment into fun, and you do that by not you, by the wife or the husband not being threatened by that other person, but seeing your wife as that other person. If he gets the hots for some babe, then all he has to do is see her as you. And you have to be able to accept that without being threatened by it. No, not a wig, but it's just the idea of you. You have to play that fantasy without being threatened by it.
You have to wear shoes.
That's easy. Yeah. Once you find out how much fun it is, it's easy. Well, it's a way to transform the husband and the wife so that the wife is every woman and the husband is every man.
He's radical. I mean, yeah, I can.
Of course, it's radical. Did you expect anything else?
But it is awesome.
But you just, that's why you're naked and unashamed.
I really enjoy this. I don't know why, but I am. I think part of what I'm enjoying is I think that deep down inside, I feel like a real terminal fuck up in this area, and talking about it, I just feel like.
That's enough for tonight. Anybody have any other thoughts, closing thoughts? Okay, take it, big guy.